So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Andrew Gregg to the program. How are you doing, Andrew?
Hey, how are you?
Fantastic. So I've seen a bunch of clips from your movie. We have a little mashup of some of the just little brief clips from some of the interviews here. And I hopefully did a good job describing what the documentary is about. So where I'd like to start with this is, how did you get onto this? How did you get onto looking at the controversy between sort of pro and anti-wind factions, a highly volatile topic for some people?
I was actually approached by the CBC documentary unit to look into a story about wind turbines, basically under the banner, you know, is there a chance that these things aren't as green as advertised? I was pretty skeptical about at the time, it was about 2 years ago. We looked at everything from, at least initially, bird and bat mortality to whether these things deliver the power as promised, to all sorts of different issues. But what ended up being our focus was health issues because of the different complaints that were coming from rural parts of the province where wind farms were going in pretty quickly. And so that's the line we ended up following, and it took us out west to Alberta, down to Texas, over to Denmark and Scotland and Maine as well.
Okay, now I got a bit of a mashup of just real brief clips from some of the interviews you did. We're just going to play it. It's about 2 minutes, and we'll come back, and because I want to ask you about the backgrounds of some of the voices, some things, and I think it'll give people a fairly good idea of sort of what you talk about in the film. So
sure.
We'll just go to that, and we'll come right back.
Sure.
I think that there are people that are really suffering from having the presence of these windmills all around their homes or around their farms. And whether it's psychological or whether it's really physical, does it really matter? I mean, there are people that are not responding well to it.
If we were given a medication to a person and they were coming with all of these symptoms, the regulators would be saying, stop giving people these medications. In a flash, doctors would be saying, stop taking that medication. It's making you too ill.
Well, you're allowed to have a mortgage that is basically paid for by our windmills, and it meant that we could keep our farm in family and as a family farm unit rather than selling off to a larger mega farm or corporation.
The real question is, do wind turbines cause noise? Yes. Do they cause sleep deprivation? Yes. Is sleep deprivation a problem? Well, of course it is. Well, therefore, we have a completely plausible chain of causation here.
I would not say, though, that I believe that wind shouldn't happen in Ontario. I think there's probably a way to do it, and I think that it's important to have wind development in Ontario. It's just probably, you know, there were certainly some missteps.
550 meters, I think I described it as insane, because you know there are going to be people being disturbed by having a wind turbine 550 meters from their house. If you go up to 2 kilometers, which some people suggest, then that will drop the incidence of issues with these things a lot, but you'll still have some people still sensitive at 2 kilometers. So ignoring that sound is a bit like visible light, saying, okay, we'll just look at visible light, so go and lay on a beach all day. It's not going to harm you. It's not going to, you know, you won't get sunburned. Because if you ignore the part you can't see, you're going to come to the wrong conclusion. So you have engineers making judgments about health effects and saying there's no health effects. And these people have engineering background and have no concept at all of what the real health effects are. I mean, they haven't come to the scientists who understand the problem better.
Had one of the experts from the Ontario Agency for Health Promotion Protection who came up, he's the environmental, in charge of their environmental division, and he said he'd never seen anything like it either. That so many people upset by these things. And very consistent symptoms. We need more information about what is this hazard so we can mitigate it. I'm not against green energy at all. But I don't think we should be injuring people, even if there are susceptible 5 or 10%. We need to know who those people are and protect them like we do on any other hazard that we know about.
All right. So some of the voices that we heard there, that was clips.
I like that. That was Well done.
Oh, thanks. Some of the clips that we took there, I'll just list off some of the voices here, and then we'll get you to tell us just about your experience meeting and speaking to these people. So one of the main characters in the film is Norma Schmidt. She's a registered nurse. That was the second clip we played there. There's Dixon Hammond, who's a rancher that you spoke to. Several doctors here, Dr. Warren McBee, Dr. Michael Nissenbaum, Dr. Alex Salt, Dr. Hazel Lynn, and Justin Thompson, who's the vice president of Joss Wind. So you got a fairly wide-ranging, you spoke to more people than just that, but that was sort of some of the highlights. Mm-hmm. Can you just talk about your experience, not even necessarily in the content, but just when you went to talk to these people about this topic, what was your sense? Are these sort of people who are, you know, very excitable and they're on a mission to stop wind, or are these people that sort of, you know, reluctantly accepting the facts? How was your impression of the people that you spoke to about this?
Well, I should say at the beginning, I was pretty skeptical that these things could make people sick. My approach, I grew up on a farm myself in southwestern Ontario, and my initial feeling when I first saw these things go up was, well, this is a chance for farmers to make some more cash. Depending on the type of farming operation, that's a great benefit, right? But then my wife's family is from up in Bruce County, and I had paid attention up there to the amount of wind farms going in, and I started meeting these different people that said that they'd gotten ill, particularly Norma. And once I followed their stories, it was pretty incredible how consistent the stories were and how consistently none of these people really had a dog in the fight about green energy or not. The thing about Bruce County as a good sort of area to go and film is that it's also the home of Bruce Nuclear. 80% of the people that live up there derive income directly or indirectly from the nuclear plant. So this is an energy producing county. And that, as they say, the nuclear umbrella stretches well into Gray County and down into Huron County. So this is an area where a lot of turbines are going in, but people are used to producing energy. And I thought it was interesting that the backlash against wind turbines up there was so vehement. And that wasn't just the sort of the conservative rural Ontarian that you're seeing protest against these things. There's a lot of young people too that would, in other circumstances, be behind an idea of green energy. But this came in and really got a lot of people upset, strictly based on how they were feeling. But the turning point for me was talking to Dr. Hazel Lynn, the medical officer of health for Gray County and Bruce County. She's up in Owen Sound. And she, once again, didn't have an opinion one way or another on wind, but she couldn't believe the number of patients and GPs coming to her with the same set of symptoms saying that we're feeling sick. And that, for me, was the turning point when I talked to Hazel Lynn. She's a person that's worked all around the world. She's not. Well accomplished and very experienced person. And for me, that was the tip off to start looking into this a little bit more seriously, the health effects.
Okay, so I've got several questions just based on that. First of all, starting at the beginning of just your comment there, you said you know, people didn't necessarily have a dog in the race, as it were, or horse in the race, I guess is the right analogy.
Dog in a fight,
horse in a race. There, I always get that sort of thing mixed up. But I mean, and then you also said though that the majority of people up there derive their funding from the nuclear facility. So wouldn't potentially, just as far as sort of being clear, wouldn't potentially these people be inclined, or at least there would be plausible to be inclined against wind because it could potentially be a threat to their livelihoods? No, is that not?
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, the new hydro corridor that's going up there from Toronto to Bruce County is specifically to bring more nuclear and more wind down to the cities in southwestern urban Ontario. So it's actually, this hydro corridor is actually encouraging both. Mm. So ideally, you know, I mean, look at it this way. You could have a farming operation with a job at Bruce Nuclear and sign a lease to have a turbine on your property. That's a pretty good deal, right? Particularly that those turbines, nobody knows how much. There's gag orders on all the turbine leases, but some of these leases are pretty, they're getting, you know, into the tens of thousands per annum. So that's pretty good. And when you speak specifically about Norma Schmidt, Norma's a very outspoken person about this. She was all for wind, and she says this in the film, all for wind when it first came in, no problems at all. And then she started feeling sick, and she's one of these people that has been hypersensitive to having these things around her house, and it's really just devastated her life.
Okay, so one of the things that was that's mentioned several times, it's used, it's spoken about both in the film, and it's also the line that I've been, you know, when you're talking to some of the doctors in here that you've got, but it's also the sort of line that we were hearing a year or 2 years ago when there was very unorganized sort of protests. In that case, I could be wrong, but I feel like there was a link later made to someone sort of riling people up to go and do it. Like, it wasn't a natural uprising of people that showed up at that public hearing. Was the idea that, you know, there's not enough research, we don't know. But doesn't that cut both ways?
I'm not quite sure if I'm following you. I know there was an umbrella group called Wind Concerns Ontario that certainly was rallying people up. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
But there were also small splinter groups that were forming all over the place on their own and going to council meetings. And the different wind companies were holding information nights.
Mm-hmm.
So these people were going to the information nights on their own. There's 50 or 60 of them around Ontario. Wind Concerns is kind of... has been through a couple of permutations in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's as effective as it was at getting everybody worked up. But they seem to, particularly in areas like Chatham-Kent, they seem to be very well organized on their own. I think that you could say that I think what you're getting at with the research is that, could it go both ways? I guess so. My point in the film isn't really about, I mean, for me, there's more of a meta argument here. It's not specifically that green energy is bad. I mean, I don't think that at all. As a matter of fact, I think anything to get us off the coal-fired plants, everybody would agree that's good.
Mm-hmm. And I should note from what I've seen, just because I've seen obviously more of the film than anyone that might be listening to this, that I didn't get that impression from anybody that I saw in the film, that there was anyone who seemed to be out to get green energy.
No, and I have to, you know, full disclosure, I stayed away from those people. Because
they do exist, I'm sure.
Well, you know, it's like anything. You know, I've done films on indigenous survival. I've done films on caribou herds. I mean, every time you get into something like this, you get both sides coming at you wanting to, you know, once they hear you're filming,
mm-hmm.
you know, everybody tries to mold your argument.
Absolutely.
But I think for me, though, the point is that this is a technology, wind farming, that was developed in places like the prairies, and in Europe, originally in places like Denmark and Germany, was developed with very small machines, 330 kilowatts. The original wind farm in Canada outside of Pincher Creek is the Cowley Ridge Wind Farm. And it came in the 90s. It came in small. There was a lot of community consultation. As it grew, more wires went in, and also there's a lot more space out there. So once the turbines got up to 2.3 and now 3 megawatts, the setbacks were not an issue because you could put them out in the middle of nowhere and nobody would hear them. What Ontario did, the government brought in the Green Energy Act in 2009 was saying, okay, we're making a commitment to wind power. And, it didn't start small. It just came in, boom, with 1.5 megawatt, 2.3 megawatt machines, into a rural patchwork area of farms that are basically 120 acres long and narrow, so the distance between buildings on those farms isn't that great. So it's taking a prairie technology and implanting it on a southwestern Ontario geography. And for me, that's the problem, because they didn't ever consider that there could be noise issues with these big machines,
mm-hmm.
just introducing them literally overnight to an area that's not used to them. And I think it's no wonder that there's a backlash against it, because it is a pretty huge thing to ask people to accept.
So let's be clear about that point then. Is it, so far from what you've seen, and I want to, right after this, I'm going to get you just to talk about some of the symptoms and what people have been feeling and, mm-hmm. and what have been reporting. But is this so far, it seems to be that the issue is simply the size of the machines, or is that...
Well, I think increasingly that's the problem. And have you seen the whole thing?
I haven't seen all of it, but I saw about 75% of it. Yeah.
Okay, because at the end we go to Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
And in Denmark, this is the home of wind. You know, this is the poster child for wind.
Mm-hmm.
And we had several people saying to us, you know, well, why are they having so much trouble in Ontario when everybody in Denmark's happy with them?
Mm-hmm.
So we went over to Denmark. And what's happened in Denmark is that, as I said, in the 90s they started with these small machines. And they tended to be sort of co-ops, where different communities would have small wind farms within their jurisdiction. Then the wind companies started making the machines bigger and bigger, but they took them offshore because Denmark's so small.
Mm-hmm.
The other imperative in Denmark is that before wind, 100% of their energy was coming from coal. They've got no rivers or waterfalls or anything like that that they can use for hydro, and they're a non-nuclear country. So they're having to import all of their fuel to for all of their power. Wind gave them an opportunity for a certain amount of energy independence. So they went offshore into the North Sea, and we went out and filmed on the Horns Rev wind farm, which is pretty impressive. It's 30K offshore, and those machines out there are 2.3 megawatts. The new ones are going to be 3 and up. Vestas is actually working on a 6-meg wind turbine to put out there. But the wind companies started to realize that putting turbines up offshore costs twice as much as putting turbines onshore. You've got to sink pylons and all this stuff. So overnight, they started putting the 2.3 megawatt machines onshore, and immediately you had people complaining about the same symptoms. And now in Denmark, a small country, there are 177 anti-wind groups. So back to your question about is it size? I think that if you look at the Denmark example, it's size relative to proximity. I think if you got a three megawatt wind turbine and put it offshore, you've got a perfect scenario for generating wind power.
Mm.
But once you take that giant machine to a small country like Denmark and put it right smack dab in between about four or five small farms, you've got a problem again.
Okay. So one of the main points coming to this, let's start with, if you can just go through what has sort of been reported as the health effects. What are people who are claiming that there has been an effect from wind farm, what are they reporting to their doctors?
Well, in terms of symptoms, they're reporting nausea, headaches, vertigo, and that's how it starts. But on a broader scale, and we talked to scientists in Denmark about this, what they're experiencing is sleeplessness. It all comes down to sleeplessness. And as Norma Schmidt says, that the first couple of nights, okay, a couple of weeks, okay, a couple of months, and then it goes to a couple of years. And we talked to a scientist who's doing work in Aarhus University in Denmark that says what happens with this chronic sleeplessness is that it leads to heart disease, depression, and in some cases diabetes. So it goes on beyond people being grumpy in the morning because they didn't get a good night's sleep. What happens is that chronic sleeplessness leads to very serious health issues. So Norma Schmidt, once again, is sort of the poster child for that she's had to move out of her house, she's lost her job, she's not a nurse anymore, her family's fallen apart. I mean, there's all of these horrible issues that have gone around it. And then as you go around, you start finding more and more stories like that. And the wind farms have come in, particularly in Bruce County, and have bought out families that have complained of being sick, but made them sign gag orders so they couldn't talk about it anymore. So there's all these sort of dealings going on that are this side of shady, and you're wondering, okay, well, what's going, why are they doing this? And why are they getting these people to sign gag orders? Why don't they want them to talk about it? These people will talk off camera, and they're talking about the exact same things Norma's talking about, chronic sleeplessness.
And one of my initial reactions when I first heard about when we first started getting reports outside of simply knee jerk, this is crazy hippie technology,
we stay away from all that. We stay away from the NIMBYism.
Yeah.
There are legitimately people who just don't like looking at them.
That was sort of the initial effect before we started getting.
And
these
I think
health
in the
effects,
Scarborough, so. In their headline about Scarborough, I really think that was the issue.
Yeah, in that particular case, definitely. I didn't even at the time think that was the entire sort of opposition group, but that they do exist. But when we're talking about that sort of, that was the initial knee jerk reaction. Then health started coming out.
Yeah.
When you're talking to these people, do you find, like, as you said, you made a very clear point about saying that you didn't speak to anyone that you got the impression had any anti-green ideas, and that you intentionally stayed away from the people that were having a NIMBY sort of reaction to this.
Mm-hmm.
The people that you did speak to that were opposing it, like when I heard this problem, my reaction originally when I was hearing the NIMBYism arguments years ago, and that was all that you were hearing,
mm-hmm.
was, well, I'd sure rather that 5% of us, had some restless nights than, 40% of us get cancer from coal. And so therefore that led me to think, well, okay, even if there is an effect here, this is an engineering problem more than it's a policy problem.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find, when you were speaking to folks, did you get the impression that they were interested in sort of fixing this so that we can proceed with it, or that this would turn them off the whole thing and that they think we should drop wind altogether?
They'd just turn them off the whole thing, because there's a whole bunch of other things that have gone on too that I don't get into in this documentary because it's too big a story. But from the consistent anecdotal stories I've heard is that the wind companies and their leases are very reminiscent of carpetbaggers. that they're coming in and they're promising all this stuff, and farmers are finding that they're very restricted with what they can do on their own property after the turbines go in. But that's a whole other story, and that goes down the road, you know, into another avenue, and you'd end up being on a whole other show. A lot of people don't like how they've been treated by the wind companies. The wind companies also, if you're going to drive around southwestern Ontario and look at the names on the sides of the nacelles, they're almost all owned by Canadian oil and gas companies that all also have interest in the tar sands. And a lot of them are using their investment in wind in Ontario as carbon offsets against the tar sands. So there's all sorts of dealings going on behind the scenes that belie this idea that they're just these perfect white noble instruments that are just going to save the planet. The other thing too is that once the dissatisfaction is in among the population, right? Once people realize that I don't like this because I can't sleep all night because it's noisier and noisier, then they start hearing stuff about how much power does it actually produce. You know, is our grid ready to actually deal with the power coming off these turbines? Who's making the money? Then it just spirals out of control, and you get that sort of unfocused protest movement that I think you mentioned before, that's all over the place, that just kind of scattershot just wants to take the whole industry down because people are angry. And I think the other thing that you can't discount here is the way that the Green Energy Act was designed so that the wind developers can bypass municipalities to deal directly with the province. There were wind developers in Ontario before 2009, and I met some of them, and they said that it was very frustrating trying to get a wind farm going because they had to deal with politicians at the municipal level, and they were just held up for years on end because, quite rightly, these municipalities wanted health studies, and among other things. And the wind developers just basically said, we don't have the time, and we can't afford the investment. With the Green Energy Act, they were given basically a green light that all you have to do is get a one-time approval through the Ontario government, and you don't have to worry about places like Amherst and Merlin and Kincardine because you're pre-approved. So these people feel that their democratic right to defend themselves has been removed, and in many ways they're right. It has been. And I think that that's a really bad bit of PR for the provincial government. So, you know, put yourself in the position of a person that's on a family farm. That's their entire investment. Then your neighbor gets a wind lease. The thing is just beyond 550 meters from your house, which is the regulated setback, but a lot of experts say that it's just arbitrary. It has nothing to do with anything.
Well, I think in a lot of cases, on a lot of issues, those numbers end up being arbitrary. So.
Yeah. It's we
that's
talk
what
to
happens when you get politicians doing science,
and engineers and engineers writing health policy.
Yeah,
that's another issue, and then the next thing you know, you can't sleep, and you've got nowhere to go to complain about it. There's nothing you can do about it, and that is the situation that a lot of these people are finding themselves in. So what? As I say, going way back to the beginning, when I had all of these different issues facing me that were all intriguing on their own right, the idea of first of all, the health being the nub of it, and then nowhere to turn to once you realize you've got to do something about it, it's no wonder you're seeing people protest. So I don't think they need an umbrella group to get them whipped up, because they're already whipped up, because you're dealing with people's personal property.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very basic idea of society, you know? That something is going horribly wrong next door, I should be able to do something about it. But you can't.
So you obviously, I mean, we've spoken to lots of documentary directors on this show before in the past several years. I'm a big fan of documentaries in general, which is why I like talking to producers and directors of documentaries. But part of that process is essentially that you sort of have to live it. You really get into people's lives and ask them to share their experiences and their personal thoughts with you. So having gone through the experience of producing this film, I'm very interested. We've only got about a minute and a half left here. Just before we go, I want to get sort of now at the end, you've finished. It's about to be airing, and I'm sorry, I forgot to write down the actual date that it's airing.
Oh, next Thursday, the 7th on CBC Doc Zone at 9 o'clock, wherever you are.
February 7th at 9 o'clock,
yeah.
CBC Documentary Channel. Thank you.
Sorry, no, main channel, Doc Zone.
Sorry, main channel.
Main channel, Doc Zone, the show Doc Zone.
Okay, well, regardless of my stumbling, we will have the accurate information posted on the website afterwards, so if anyone missed that or if you're confused about the back and forth, go ahead and check out the website, greenmajority.ca. That will be up there.
Yeah.
But just before we go then, having lived through that experience, having shared all these people's personal experiences with you, and sort of coming from the point of view of being very skeptical about it, you seem to have implied now that you've somewhat changed your mind. I would like to know that should the decision be up to you, how would you proceed on this issue from here? Is the next step cancel all the projects? Is the next step let's do some research? Where do we go from here, in your opinion?
Well, I think you've got political imperatives, and I think you've got health imperatives. The political imperative is you start canceling these contracts, particularly the $7 billion Samsung plant coming in. You're going to be caught. It's going to cost so much money. I think the Green Energy Act was very poorly written and very poorly thought out. I think that in a lot of instances, the Ontario Agricultural, I can't remember the proper name, but the Farmers Association has called for a moratorium on all wind farms. And this is the association representing people who are financially benefiting from these things. So they've called for a moratorium. I think from a human health point of view, you've got to consider a moratorium. On top of that, and I know we're pressed for time, I think you have to consider where you are in the world and decide what the best form of new green energy is for you, as opposed to importing something that works somewhere else in a completely different topography. Here, I know it's controversial, but nuclear has worked really well for us. It didn't work so well in Japan. For the amount of money that they've put into turbines, there could have been a new reactor. The other thing, and I don't want to open up a whole new line of reasoning, but you can start making our own homes much more energy independent. And of all the studies I've read, what people say the best possible thing we could do is energy conservation, that we could improve how we use electricity and the amount we use by up to 50%. So there's a lot of other things we could be investing in, as opposed to just putting up turbines because they work in the prairies.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the kind of take-home point here as well is that what people who are interested in the environmental issues and our listeners and everything, I think this is an excellent point to sort of remind everybody that things are not necessarily, and this doesn't mean that this issue goes one way or the other. We don't know, and I'm someone who's skeptical until I see evidence for anything at all.
Yeah.
And so basically my position on this was there seems to be an effect, but I'm not willing to say that there is until I see a paper on it. But I think what this serves as a good reminder is that something isn't necessarily good just because we've called it green. And that doesn't mean my conclusion goes one way or the other, but I think you've raised an interesting point here that, you know, the idea that something is, we call it green energy, doesn't mean that it should get a sort of free pass, carte blanche, necessarily. And then my position on this would be definitely that we need to get some more research before we make decisions either way.
And the last point, the scientists I have in this all have peer-reviewed papers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps if there's a way you want to send any of that to me as well, I'd love to link that directly on the thing. I guaranteed this interview will get some comments on our Facebook afterwards. So, and I look forward to hearing people's discussion. If you have any questions or concerns for Andrew, Greg, perhaps if you have any contact information you'd like to give out.
Yeah, sure. You can actually go to my blog. It's just andrewgregg.ca. And CBC is going to have a website up pretty soon. I've written a thing on my blog about this whole, just like what we talked about now. And I normally get letters after a broadcast. I never get anything before. And this has been unbelievable. I'm just getting so much stuff.
Yeah.
It's one of those dinner table things. You have a story like this come along every now and again, and you throw it out there at the dinner table, regardless of who you're talking to, everybody has an opinion.
Yeah, I guarantee it. Well, I want to thank you very much for your time. It was definitely an interesting documentary. I think that regardless of how people feel about the issue, as we can both agree, there definitely needs to be some more information. So I think what people really need to do is they should definitely go and check out the documentary, have a look at it, listen to what people have to say, make up their own minds, and then I think probably at the end of it, everyone's going to agree with you and me that this definitely at least needs to be looked at more seriously.
Oh, there's so much more stuff, and it's almost a shame that the way that the feed-in energy tariff works so that it encourages wind, because biomass is getting overlooked, and particularly in rural Ontario, what could be done with that is just incredible. You know, so there's a lot of other things that could be developed that aren't being developed because of this fixation on wind.
All right. Well, I think that's a good place to leave it, but I want to thank you very much for joining us, Andrew Gregg, producer, writer, and director of documentary Wind Rush, which will be on CBC on the 7th at 9 p.m.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. All right. This has been Green Majority. As I just mentioned, we were speaking to Andrew Gregg there.